of Al-Quds.
Shahid Sayyid Radi Al-Musawi.
Sayyid Radi Musawi, God bless his soul, was one of the great leaders in the IRGC who devoted his life to support the honorable resistance in the region, especially in Lebanon and Palestine. Therefore, he is a part of every blessed bullet or rocket that is being fired to target the criminal Zionist regime, whether in Palestine or Lebanon.
Sayyid Radi is now seen as a regional leader and martyr, just as General Soleimani. He is regarded by many as a martyr in the long battle for the liberation of Al-Quds. On the martyrdom anniversary of General Qasem Soleimani, the resistance front has bid farewell to another leader. Sayyid Radi Musawi's role in supporting the resistance groups of Lebanon and Palestine was significant. However, for the resistance, martyrdom is another form of divine victory. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps has vowed to take tough revenge on Israel for assassinating a senior Iranian military advisor in Syria. IRGC spokesman Ramazan Sharif made this statement during a press conference held in the Iranian capital, Tehran. He blasted the Monday Israeli missile attack on Damascus that targeted Brigadier General Sayyid Razi Mousavi's residence in the Sayyid Zainab neighborhood. He also described the assassination as a continuation of Israel's violation of international laws, calling on the international community to stop the crimes of the occupying regime, which endanger international peace and security. When asked about Tel Aviv's motive for committing this heinous crime, Sharif said the regime is seeking to expand its genocidal onslaught on Gaza to the entire West Asia region.
One of the reasons is that the Israeli regime wants to extend the scope of the war beyond the borders of Palestine, and they want to deflect public attention from the Gaza war. The second point, which is important, is that the Israelis try to show off their aerial dominance. Maybe these are the two main reasons because of which the assassination was committed.
The IRGC spokesman warned that Israel must wait for a direct or indirect response as Iran reserves the right to counter the Israeli assassination. He added, the martyrdom of the Iranian commander will usher in a new era where the Zionist regime will be the loser. Sharif also touched upon the U.S. support for Israel, saying Washington is violating international law by funding and backing the regime's crimes in Gaza.
Definitely one of their strategies has been to change the Israel-Palestine conflict to Iran-America conflict. But as the wise leader of the Islamic Revolution said on the first day of the Al-Aqsa flood operation, this operation was launched by Palestinians against Israelis, and the U.S. support for Israel is the reason why the regime continues to exist.
Brigadier General Sayyid Razi Mousavi was martyred by Israel while on an advisory mission in Syria.
Truth never dies, and today it's livelier than ever as the world is observing the Israeli crimes with open eyes, conscious minds, and bleeding hearts. No matter what the Israeli regime and its supporters do to divert the global community's attention from its aggression on Gaza, the whole world are unanimously calling for justice for Palestinians. Mahdi Abbasian, Tehran.
Syrian military, religious, parliamentary and popular delegations, along with resistance representatives, visited the Iranian embassy in Damascus to convey their condolences for the martyrdom of Brigadier General Sayyid Razi Mousavi, the top commander of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps. The attendees condemned the heinous crime committed by the Israeli regime and expressed unwavering faith in the victory of the resistance.
This is a criminal act and an evidence of bankruptcy. When they failed in confronting the resistance, they resorted to assassinations. It is well known that their agenda is to target resistance leaders in Gaza, but they have failed so far. They have been unable to achieve any meaningful results except for killing innocent civilians.
I express my condolences and congratulations on behalf of the Syrian president for the martyrdom of Sayyid Razi. The price of victory and resistance are these martyrs who join thousands of martyrs of the Syrian army and all resistance forces in Lebanon and Iraq. This is the fruit of the struggle and real work to restore our usurped rights.
In a heartfelt tribute, participants spoke highly of Commander Mousavi and his significant role as an official of logistical support for the resistance front, while resistance leaders confirmed that his blood will not be in vain. Rather, it will inspire the peoples of the region to resist more than ever until the Israeli regime is fully defeated, along with its United States supporter.
As for us, the Islamic resistance in Iraq, by the permission of God, we will have a response. Our military operations in support of Gaza are ongoing. The assassination of the martyr commander Razi Mousavi aimed to cut off the supply chains and hinder the great achievements made by the Axis of Resistance in supporting Gaza.
One of the pillars of the Axis of Resistance, who dedicated his life to serving people and defending their rights. He left a great impact on the souls of those who knew him. Participants remembered him as a generous, humble, and kind-hearted man. With profound grief and resolute determination to seek justice, they expressed their unwavering confidence that Iran would retaliate against the Israeli vicious crime. Syrians and Iranians share the same grief today, along with all fighters of the resistance front, as martyr Sayed Reza Mousavi was not only a military advisor who defended Syria, but also an icon of humanity and heroism. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
With Christmas celebrations in Al-Quds and Bethlehem cancelled, the Christian Palestinians residing in Lebanon also have no reason to be joyous. Mass Christmas services have transformed into prayers of mourning. Nahida and Samar Antoun were killed by Israeli sniper fire in Gaza. They were killed as they took refuge in a monastery.
They were killed by Israeli sniper fire, and what we heard from the Pope is not true. It was not by mistake. No one is killed in Gaza by mistake. This is a Zionist policy, and they purposely kill everyone, especially the children and every Arab, no matter what their religion, because we are a thorn in their throat. But we will remain, and they will leave.
They started shelling the churches just like they shelled the mosques. We were first confident that when they go to the church, they will be safe. But sniper fire hit them in the heart of the church. So there is no safe haven in Gaza. We are not celebrating this year just like Al-Quds. We are mourning all of Palestine's martyrs, not only our relatives. Palestinian Christians in Lebanon stress that the Israeli regime does not differentiate between Muslims or Christians, since they are all with the resistance.
We salute the resistance in Gaza, Lebanon, Yemen, Iraq, and Syria, and we tell them not to stop. These racist Zionists are even worse than the Nazis. What they are doing is more heinous than what the Nazis did. If the Arabs want to forsake Al-Quds, fine. We are the ones who will liberate it with the efforts of our heroic resistance inside Palestine, and victory is very near.
Despite the sadness in the hearts of the grown-ups, they are attempting to put a smile on the faces of the children who also remember Gaza.
We're giving these gifts to the children of this camp, since it's not their crime that the Zionist occupation is killing children in Palestine. We want to give them some joy, as we have been doing for the last 5 years.
We do not feel there is a holiday, but we're trying to put some happiness in the hearts of children here while we remember that our children in Palestine are being killed every day. The Israelis do not differentiate between Muslim and Christian. It's a monster that was planted on our land, and it kills all people alike.
With tens of thousands already killed by the Israeli regime in Palestine, people at churches in Lebanon remember the oppressed people of Palestine and pray, may Christ be with them. For Palestinian Christians in Lebanon, this Christmas is an occasion to mourn rather than celebrate. As they remember their kin who were martyred in Gaza, their biggest wish of the year is that they may one day celebrate Christmas in their churches as they come back home to a free Palestine. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
The Iranian Defense Ministry spokesman has warned that Israel will have to pay the price for assassinating Iran's senior military advisor in Syria, General Sayed Razi Mousavi. Brigadier General Reza Talai Nik noted the revenge against Israel will be fulfilled at the proper time and place. Speaking at the press conference on Tuesday, the spokesman said the Zionist regime's move to assassinate Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, Brigadier General Mousavi in Damascus, reveals the terrorist nature of Israel. He added that the murder is a clear violation of Syria's sovereignty.
This crime definitely deserves punishment. The Israelis must pay the price for their recent terrorist actions. Iran will give a smart and a strong response to the Israeli strike at the appropriate time and place, and in such a way that the Zionist regime's purposes in carrying out these attacks won't be fulfilled.
Brigadier General Sayed Reza Mousavi was assassinated in a missile strike on a neighborhood in Damascus. He was in charge of the Resistance Front's logistics in Syria. Mousavi was also comrade of IRGC's late commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, who was assassinated in a U.S. drone attack near Baghdad International Airport in 2020. The IRGC strongly condemned Mousavi's assassination, saying the occupying Israeli regime will pay for this crime.
The developments in the past 4 years following the assassination of General Soleimani show that our enemies, especially the United States, have obtained opposite results from such acts of terrorism. Over the past 4 years, the ideals and patterns of resistance grew in the region and even in the world. Contrary to the terrorist goal of the United States, the resistance front has gained more power than before. The most important issue in the region and the world is still the genocide in Gaza, and the failure and defeat of the Zionists has been revealed to the world, and the regime is going through a dark period.
Experts believe Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps is revered in West Asia for its key role in helping the Iraqi and Syrian armies eliminate the Daesh terror group. And now Israel has once again demonstrated its hostility toward the IRGC and its counter-terrorism campaign by assassinating one of its senior military advisors in Syria. Iranian officials believe that the recent Israeli crimes in the region, such as the Gaza War or the assassination of the Iranian commander in Syria, shows the continued weakness and failure of the Tel Aviv regime, which leads Israel to collapse and complete destruction. Saman Kujur, Tehran.
On October 7th, the Israeli regime launched brutal bombardment of the Gaza Strip, killing and maiming tens of thousands of innocent civilians. Palestinian journalists and media workers were no exception. The Israeli regime has so far killed more than 100 Palestinian journalists as well as dozens of their family members. According to Reporters Without Borders, Palestinian journalists have no safe refuge and no way of leaving the blockaded territory.
Every day, Zionist forces target journalists in Gaza, and if they cannot kill them, they kill their family members. The Zionist regime has killed scores of our colleagues along with their families. Tel Aviv wants to silence us and prevent us from exposing Israeli war crimes.
Over the course of the Israeli onslaught, dozens of Gazan journalists have also been reported missing, detained, or injured. Israeli forces have also targeted their media offices and homes.
My message to the international community is that we here, as a journalist, we didn't feel that we are safe. We are targeted, and every time we can be bombed with the Israeli occupation forces. So my message is that we have to be saved. We are doing our work. We are only covering the acts that Israeli made here in the Gaza Strip. So we are trying to get this message to the world.
Experts have dubbed the Israeli aggression since October 7th as the deadliest period for journalists covering military conflicts in more than 3 decades.
We were displaced from the Tel al-Hawa neighborhood in Gaza City to the house of our friend, the journalist Adel Zorob, in Rafah. He hosted us for 70 days, and a few days ago, my family was sleeping in the room close to his room, and an Israeli airstrike killed him along with several members of his family and my family.
Reporters Without Borders has described the Gaza Strip as the graveyard of journalists. Journalists in Gaza have been at the forefront of the campaign to expose Israeli crimes against innocent civilians. Experts say Palestinian journalists are paying the price for the international apathy toward Israeli war crimes. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
For the first time in living memory, Christmas festivities have been cancelled in the occupied territories. No celebrations will be held in mourning and honor of thousands of Palestinians killed in the Gaza Strip because of the Israeli genocidal war. The head of the Greek Orthodox Church in Ramallah
told me that only prayers and religious rituals dedicated to the people of Gaza would be performed with hopes for the Israeli war to come to an end.
It's a big crime what's going on in the Gaza Strip. How could we celebrate? There is a part of us, part of our Palestinian people are crying, are hungry, are thirsty, and are sleeping in tents and in streets. This forced displacement of Palestinian families is unacceptable. The Palestinian Christians refuse to leave Gaza. They remain there steadfast, defending their homeland and their churches, as they are part of the Palestinian people.
Christian Palestinian families came to the church to pray, gripped with helplessness and pain amid Israel's war on Gaza. They say they are unable to celebrate while Palestinians in Gaza are suffering, while Christian Palestinians were being killed and churches destroyed.
All churches in Ramallah had been agreed upon not to celebrate Christmas this year because of the war in Gaza. There are Christians and there are churches, and the third most old church in the world present in Gaza had been bombed by the Israeli military. That's really crucial, and that's really bad.
We are unable to celebrate this year. We decided there will be no festive lights and Christmas tree as usual to mark the holiday, while all our people in Gaza are being killed. I watch the news and I see the children are either killed or they are homeless in the cold and under the heavy rain. It's heartbreaking.
Meanwhile, in the supposed birthplace of Jesus Christ, Bethlehem, in the south of the occupied West Bank, instead of the huge decorated Christmas tree, an artwork called Nativity Under the Rubble in Manger Square was put up, representing only darkness and sadness. Christmas is not the same in the occupied territory that is grieving for Gaza this year. No celebrations will be held in the occupied territories that Christians all over the world consider as a holy land. But they forget it's occupied and that Palestinian Christians there in Gaza are being killed by the Israeli occupation forces. Mona Qandil, occupied Ramallah.
Option for today and a better tomorrow. IRIB English Radio. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
The school of thought of Iranian anti-terror commander and hero, Martyr Qasem Soleimani, is intertwined with resistance, which is the main front in the face of the global arrogance and hegemonic powers. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned, please. Kayhan International wrote in this regard, "These days we are commemorating the anniversary of two of the topmost contemporary martyrs whose souls, although in perpetual bliss, crave for justice, which means capital punishment for the terroristic shedders of their innocent blood. General Qasem Soleimani was a perfect man of God, and so was his Iraqi colleague in the campaign against terrorism, Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. And the two attained martyrdom in the early hours of January 3, 2020 at Baghdad Airport, when their cowardly enemies, unable to confront them on the battlefield, launched an unmanly drone attack to assassinate them. Who were these dastardly criminals. The list is rather long. It includes the rogue Donald Trump, his war secretary Mark Esper, the roughneck Mike Pompeo, who masqueraded as a state secretary, chief CENTCOM terrorist Kenneth McKenzie, the murderous woman Gina Cherry Walker Haspel of the CIA, child killer Benjamin Netanyahu of the illegal Zionist entity, the team that executed this act of terrorism, and the traitors who leaked information to the U.S. All these enemies of humanity, whose hands are stained with the innocent blood of Martyr Soleimani, Martyr Abu Mahdi al-Mohandes, and their colleagues in the cars that unsuspectingly drove out from Baghdad airport that fateful day, cannot escape justice. Sooner than later, the elaborate security rings behind which criminals are hiding ought to be penetrated with precision for dragging them to the dock and handed the punishments they deserve for their unpardonable act of terrorism. It is not that physical elimination of General Soleimani has halted the campaign against terrorism and given super terrorist U.S. and its minions a free hand in committing crimes against humanity. No, the legacy of the said martyrs is everlasting, as is evident by events in Iran, Iraq, and around the world, where freedom-loving people on January 3rd paid glowing tributes to them for their liberating role in the region and beyond, including the tears of thanks that flowed from the eyes of the 39 Indian nurses in Mumbai. These non-Muslim women who were captured by the Daesh debauchees in the Iraqi city of Mosul were saved from molestation, sexual slavery, and possible death, thanks to the spirit of chivalry of Soleimani and his heroic underlings, whose service to humanity will be remembered forever. This is the lasting legacy of Iran's hammer of terrorism, whose brilliant strategies, whether on the battlefields or the corridors of diplomacy, are being carried out by his successors, and the thousands of Iranians, Iraqis, Syrians, Lebanese, Palestinians, Afghans, Pakistanis, Bahrainis, Yemenis, Kurds, Azeris, and others, to the exasperation of the cowardly Americans and their equally dastardly agents. Press TV had an eye on this issue, writing, "The first days of January have become a symbol of the emergence of the post-American world. From the martyrdom of General Qasem Soleimani on January 3, 2020, to the U.S. Congress takeover on January 6, 2021, these events bear a clear message. The era of American hegemony is over. The collapse of the U.S. hegemony, particularly evident in West Asia, is in reality the outcome of the heroic endeavors and actions of the Axis of Resistance, and above all, the endeavors and actions of Martyr Soleimani and his brave comrades. In order to shed light on Martyr Soleimani's role in bringing an end to U.S. hegemony and defeating Western plots in the region, we must first address the issue of current U.S. objectives in West Asia region. After 9/11 attacks, the United States began to militarily occupy West Asia under the pretext of fighting terrorism. At the time, American officials and strategists like Brzezinski unveiled various plans and plots such as the Greater Middle East or the New Middle East plans. For example, during the 33-day Israeli regime war on Lebanon in 2006, then U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice said in an important speech, "What we are seeing here is, in a sense, the growing, the birth pangs of a new Middle East, and whatever we do, we have to be certain that we are pushing forward to the new Middle East, not going back to the old Middle East." These remarks showed the U.S. government's plans for West Asia. In fact, the U.S. was trying to implement this project in order to first bring a laissez-faire economic system to the countries of the region and turn them into a bloc revolving around Israel, and second, expand the model of liberal democracy into the countries of the region. Former U.S. President George W. Bush proclaimed this in a 2003 speech after the fall of Saddam Hussein's Ba'athist regime in Iraq. Iraqi democracy will succeed, and that success will send forth the news from Damascus to Tehran that freedom can be the future of every nation. The establishment of a free Iraq at the heart of the Middle East will be a watershed event in the global democratic revolution, he claimed at the time. At the same time, then U.S. Vice President Dick Cheney announced in his speech at Davos World Economic Forum that the U.S. government was committed to promoting democracy throughout the greater Middle East and beyond. Nonetheless, this project failed, like other U.S. government projects, despite its huge cost. 20 years after those disastrous wars were launched, the current political situation in Iraq and Afghanistan attests to this reality. The wars, apart from costing the U.S. economy trillions of dollars, led to many casualties in regional nations. According to a report by Brown University, more than 900,000 people have died in post-2001 U.S. wars, including more than 70,000 civilians in Afghanistan and nearly 300,000 civilians in Iraq. In the meantime, Western support for terrorist and Takfiri groups in the region nearly completed this puzzle. Groups such as Daesh, which former U.S. President Donald Trump admitted was created by the U.S. government, tried to destabilize the region to allow the U.S. to pursue the strategy of creating a 30-year religious war in West Asia. But what Western governments never included in their calculations was martyr Soleimani, a master strategist who thwarted their plans and plots and put an end to their destructive presence in the region. The Lebanon War was the first serious confrontation between martyr Soleimani and the arrogant front. He played an important role in defeating the Zionist regime and its supporters in the 33-day war, thus bringing the Greater Middle East project to a dead end. Safuddin Tabarian, the translator of the book The Untold Stories of the 33-Day War, comments about the role of martyr Soleimani in Hezbollah's victory in the 33-Day War. He notes, "I heard from Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah himself that Haj Qasim's role in our victory in the war was even greater than Emad Mughni's role." Martyr Soleimani also played a key role in equipping and strengthening the resistance front in Palestine, acknowledged by the Secretary General of the Islamic Jihad, Ziad Nahale, a few years ago. He said, "The power and facilities that Gaza has achieved today are the results of the great efforts of Martyr Soleimani." General Soleimani's strategic step began with sending rockets and weapons to the Gaza Strip, and this was like a miracle. General Soleimani personally strived in this direction, traveled to many countries, and planned to transfer this military might to Gaza.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
We'll be right back.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. Commander of the IRGC Quds Force says the United States and Israel have been incapable of defeating Palestinian fighters in Gaza, which have only been supported by the resistance front. Brigadier General Ismail Ra'ani says resistance front's power and steadfastness has humiliated the U.S. and Israel. This comes as the Israeli regime has not achieved any of its war objectives, including the annihilation of the Palestinian resistance and releasing its captives held in Gaza after 84 days of asymmetrical war and incessant bombing of Palestinians in Gaza. Joining us on tonight's Spotlight, we have journalist, author, and activist Fra Hughes, who's joining us from Belfast, and also from Houston, Texas, we have human rights activist Mr. Mohsen Nahmi.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Mr. Nahmi. Let's start off with Mr. Frog. He's from Belfast. We'll get to Mr. Nahmi in just a moment. Now, since the beginning of the onslaught on Palestinians, the Israeli regime has sought to dismantle the resistance groups in Gaza. However, 84 days of lethal and deadly attacks, the Palestinian resistance groups are fighting back strong, both inside and outside of Gaza. The commander of the IRGC Quds Force, General Ismail Ra'ani, has also said that the United States and Israel have been incapable of defeating Palestinian fighters in Gaza. So, apart from just murdering innocent women and children, being a record holder for killing children, what have the Israelis achieved?
Well, it depends on what you really believe is the true objective of the war on Gaza. They have stated that they are going to use their military might to force Hamas and the various resistance groups to release the captives. But what they are doing, in effect, is collective punishment. They are making northern Gaza uninhabitable. They are forcing people through bombs and through starvation to move from northern Gaza and indeed settle Gaza further south towards Rafah. They're trying to corral 2.4 million people into a space that is probably one-third of the original size of Gaza. So they're not fighting Hamas. What they're doing is destroying the civilian infrastructure and the civilian population inside Gaza. Now, this started on the 17th of October, and people can go back to 1948. But what is obvious is that, sadly, this was always going to happen. If the Zionists want to create their greater Israeli project, then they were always going to try to expel the people of Gaza into the Sinai. So what they have really failed is that Hamas is standing firm. Hamas is as strong today as it was on the very first day of this military carpet bombing and military intervention by the Zionist regime into Gaza. And the troops they are losing every day and the equipment is testimony to the strength, the steadfastness, and the resilience of the resistance. And any Palestinians who I have seen who have been maimed or have had family members decimated by this unconscionable Israeli attack all seem to be standing firmly behind the resistance and all seem determined to stay in Gaza for as long as it takes to outlast this current round of militarism from Tel Aviv and from Netanyahu.
Mohsen Ahvi, Palestinian resistance fighters, they've carried out retaliatory operations against the Israeli regime across the Gaza Strip. Since the onset of the Israeli ground operation, which started on October 17th, the regime says it has lost 167 troops in the Gaza Strip, but Hamas says the number of fatalities is much higher. Also, scores of Israeli armored vehicles, including the much-touted Merkava tanks, have been destroyed in Gaza. An Israeli Skylark II spy drone was also downed by the resistance fighters. What do these figures say about the firm stance of the resistance in Gaza?
It clearly states that the resistance is still alive, even though 20,000 civilians have been killed by the Zionist regime. The resistance is still alive. The resistance really hasn't taken any kind of hit, whereas the Zionist regime has shown how weak they are with the vulnerability that we have seen of the Zionist regime on ground. You see, even though mainstream media is not telling us or is not informing their audiences about the success of the operations that Palestinian resistance fighters have had on ground, we have different sources now on Telegram and other media outlets where we find, in outlets like Press TV, where we are told the successes that Hamas and other resistance fighters have had on ground in Gaza. Especially when Abu Ubaidah comes out and gives these official statements where he tells the audience the kind of damage that they have imposed upon the Zionist regime, the fact that they have managed to attack their tanks, the fact that they were able to ambush many of Hamas's brigades, the fact that the Golani Brigade was also targeted, which is an elite brigade of the Zionist regime, that they were forced to retreat, are all signs that the resistance forces in Palestine are able and very much capable of defending themselves. The only way that the Zionist regime can have full control over Gaza is if they are able to exterminate and defeat Hamas on ground. And we can clearly see that that seems like an impossibility. If they weren't able to do this since the war started on October 7th, they won't be able to do it in the future. And from what we see right now, that all resistance fighters have not yet engaged the Zionist regime in full contact. We see Hezbollah engaging from the northern side. We see Hashd al-Shaabi indirectly targeting U.S. sites, because U.S. is deeply involved, is a direct party in this war. We see the Yemenis performing beautifully by controlling the sea, but there are many other factions, there are many other resistance groups that can fully involve themselves in this conflict, but they are waiting for the right time. Hamas has performed more than the Muslim Ummah expected from them, and they are true. There's no doubt that Hamas has become a source of honor for every single group that fights against oppression, and especially Muslims throughout the world.
Frahues, let's go back in the timeline a little bit. The Israeli regime, it increased its deadly acts of aggression against Palestinians since late December 2022, when the ultra-right-wing cabinet took office. Senior Hamas leader Yahya Sinwar had warned that the Gaza-based resistance groups should be fully prepared for the quote-unquote big battle for Al-Aqsa Mosque if Israel does not cease its aggression at the holy site. Now, Sinwar, he held firm on his promise, as he's known to be the mastermind of the Al-Aqsa flood operations. Sinwar recently issued a statement proving that he's alive and well, that the Israelis will suffer on the ground in Gaza. All this shows that the resistance is prepared to stand up and go toe-to-toe with the occupiers.
Yes, they've always wanted to bring the Israelis into close contact in order to go man-to-man, toe-to-toe. Israeli soldiers are used to bombing civilians, They're used to using artillery under ships under airplanes. They're used to raiding civilian refugee camps and taking away men and young boys in the wee hours of the morning. They are not true soldiers, but many of them are appear to be kind of psychopaths in uniform. Many of them follow the Israeli Zionist kind of mantra that all a Palestinian belongs to them. It was given to them by God. I have seen a video of an Israeli soldier who is also an Israeli comedian on the beach in Gaza, stripping down to his underwear and getting into the water and saying, "This is ours, this is our land." We've heard Netanyahu tell the settlers that they're going to build settlements in Gaza. And also there was a comment directed towards Elon Musk where Netanyahu said that Gaza would need to be rebuilt. He doesn't intend to rebuild Gaza for Palestinians. He intends to rebuild Gaza for settler expansion, colonial experiment that is the Israeli apartheid state. We have seen through the resistance that what was happening in Al-Quds, in Al-Aqsa Mosque, that was going to slowly, day by day, week by week, month by month, be taken over by the settler movement. We've seen them. We've seen the attacks by the Jerusalem Police and Army on the worshippers on Fridays in Al-Aqsa Mosque, and we've seen the settlers storming the mosque. The overall plan is for the Israelis and for the settlers, I believe, at some stage in the future, fully occupy the Al-Aqsa Mosque, similar to what they have done in the Ibrahimi Mosque in El-Khalili in Hebron. So I think the resistance moved before the opportunity no longer existed to defend Al-Aqsa, and it is the right of the Palestinians to choose the path of resistance in order to protect their holy sites, to protect their families, to protect their land, protect their homes, and protect their futures.
Mohsen Avi, an analysis by U.S. intelligence agencies has shown that Hamas's credibility and influence has grown dramatically in the months since the October 7 operations and the onset of Israel's war on Gaza. Is this another aspect of the war that the Israelis have failed in?
I don't think we should rely much on U.S. intelligentsia because of their bias. But having said that, this intelligence report is clearly correct. But I think the U.S. have used this for their own benefit, meaning they're using this as a pretext to not vote for a ceasefire, that with this spread of fame of Hamas, that is an inherent threat to so-called peace in the region. That's the kind of pretext that the U.S. want to use. And on the other hand, they also want to use this intelligence report to kind of impose upon the Zionist regime as well that, hey, stop fighting, because of your bombardment on Gaza, Hamas is gaining popularity. But in the facts on ground are that there is no doubt that Hamas has gained massive popularity, not just within the West Bank or in Gaza. Obviously, in Gaza, they've always been a majority political party, but they have managed to gain popularity throughout the world as well. In countries, in different Muslim countries, Hamas are seen to be the flag bearers of resistance against the Zionist regime right now, and they are very well respected amongst all sects of Islam and amongst all resistance groups that are fighting for liberation in their own regions. So that's one. Another reason why I feel Israel has failed in driving the narrative is because what narratives has the Israelis always given to the world? Number one, that they're indestructible. No one can fight them. No one has the ability to fight them. Clearly, Hamas has proven them wrong. Obviously, Hezbollah had proven them wrong in 2000 and 2006, but clearly Hamas has also managed to prove them wrong. They haven't been able to achieve any of their military objectives in Gaza as of now. Secondly, the intelligentsia. They've always been so proud about the strong intelligence that the Israelis have had. Clearly, that idol has broken now. There's no respect for the Mossad anymore. There's no respect for Israeli intelligence anymore. The October 7th resistance by Hamas was a huge failure of Israeli intelligentsia. And so that idol has also been clearly been broken. Also, the narrative that the world is with Israel, that the world supports Israel, the kind of protests that we've seen across the globe, throughout the Arab world, throughout the Muslim world, throughout South Asia, throughout North America and South America, this is unprecedented. Meaning, even if there are governments who are restraining from voicing the atrocities that the Zionist regime are committing, we see that people, citizens of those countries, are coming out in the millions to call out for a ceasefire. And clearly there's a shift of narrative in which resistance seems like a legitimate option now. And any so-called serious group that tries to undermine the significance of resistance of Palestinian freedom fighters against the Zionist regime, they cannot be taken seriously anymore, because what else does a nation do when their kids are killed in the thousands, when their women are killed in the thousands? So clearly, the whatever narrative that the Israeli regime has proposed or given to the world, that has clearly been shattered after October 7th levels.
Farahyus in Belfast, according to Gaza officials, 90% of the population in Gaza has been displaced since the onset of the war. The Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has on various occasions admitted he's pushing for the expulsion of Gaza's population under the term voluntary migration. Now, as almost all of buildings in northern Gaza have been flattened by voluntary, what do the Israelis mean? Voluntary, that if you leave, you leave, and if you stay, you'll either starve or you'll be incinerated.
Yes, the weaponized hunger is part of this ongoing murder campaign in Gaza. And what they hope to do, I would imagine, is if you bomb enough people, if you starve enough people. Let's just take an example of two parents who have survived so far, maybe with their children and maybe with an elderly relative. They have a choice of trying to find drinkable water every day or trying to find food. I have friends in Khan Yunis that I was chatting to just the other day who told me that there is no food in Khan Yunis. And what the Israeli regime is hoping to do is starve the Palestinian people who survived their murderous onslaught into submission. But if you have a young family and you're watching your children starve, and somebody opened a Rafah border and said, you know, there is help, there are refugee tents, there is food, there is water. Whether or not the Egyptians would agree to that is a separate issue. But I think if people were given the option, I think parents would vote with their feet, the way they have voted to leave parts of northern Gaza for the so-called safe areas, which don't exist in southern Gaza, in order to save their families. And that is what the Israelis mean by voluntary relocation. You voluntarily leave, you won't get to come back, but you've left voluntarily, so they cannot be accused of having displaced the people through force of arms. But that is indeed what they're doing on the ground as we speak.
And staying with you, Mr. Hughes, Hamas has rejected the Israeli claim that post-war Gaza will not be governed by the resistance group or by any Palestinian group. The relentless airstrikes and shelling have destroyed two-thirds of all structures in northern Gaza and a quarter in the south. Are the Israelis ensuring that there is nothing left of Gaza to govern at all? The bombing of Gaza, which has been equivalent to the nuclear bombs dropped by the U.S. in Japan, has been so intense that Gaza is already being deemed as unlivable.
Well, I think it was UNRWA or somebody reported several years ago that by 2020 or by 2021, Gaza would be uninhabitable because of the problems with water and the problems with the economy and the number of people unemployed and the pressure that was already being exerted on the health service then. It's before the war. It's before this atrocious carpet bombing campaign by the Zionist regime. In the worst case scenario, if they were to force the Gazans into the Sinai, then you would have Hamas continuing to try to liberate Palestinian land from Egypt. Then the Israelis would hold the Egyptians accountable for the actions of Hamas and the resistance groups if they were in the Sinai. So who governs Gaza when this atrocious onslaught finally comes to an end? And the sooner that happens, the better. If the Palestinians are still steadfast and are still there, you will still have some form of social governmental bodies in order to help facilitate food, shelter, education, and healthcare. So there will be, there will de facto be a government of sorts in Gaza. But if Netanyahu is implying that there will be no Gazans in Gaza, so there will be no Palestinians to have a government over that small tract of land, over that enclave that is 26 miles by 5 miles, then that is what he intends, and whether or not he achieves that goal remains to be seen.
Moussa Naghvi, when we're talking about the resistance, there's two aspects. One would be the Palestinian resistance, then it's the overall resistance front in the region. How important has the unified response been from the resistance in the region? Lebanon's Hezbollah, Yemen's Ansarullah resistance movement, and the armed forces of the country. Resistance groups in Syria have also carried out operations against Israel and the U.S. Positions. In Iraq, an Islamic resistance group last week carried out an attack on a major Israeli port in retaliation for the war on Gaza. Are the Israelis and Washington not considering the repercussions of a coordinated and unified response from all resistance fronts in the region?
They're definitely considering this dynamic. And I think Hamas has really told the world the importance of the actions by other resistance fighters or other resistance groups that have taken place in that region. There is no doubt that it has created pressure on Western imperialistic powers like the US, the UK, France. They really haven't been able to do anything against the Ansarullah. The Ansarullah have stated their unequivocal policy against any kind of breach in the Red Sea, against any kind of support from the Red Sea to the Zionist regime by any Western power. They are very clear in their stance. We see Hezbollah being praised by Hamas for the stance that they have taken, for the attack that they have made on the Northern Front, because of which we see a diversion of Israel's military power towards the northern border. It's quite apparent that Israel is surrounded from all sides. It is quite apparent that the U.S. sees the unification of the resistance forces in the region of West Asia, and they definitely see themselves weakened in this region. Not only have they been expelled from Afghanistan, but now their expulsion from Iraq has also become very, very close. And we see the U.S. weakened.